Welcome to the Rise Network podcast show, a podcast dedicated to help you reach your dream lifestyle through investing in real estate. We're going to be sitting down with new, intermediate, and experienced investors to talk all about real estate and how it has changed their lives. If you're looking to scale your portfolio or even just get into real estate investing, you're in the right place. Make sure to tune in.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Rise Real Estate Investing Podcast with your host, Mayu Thava and
Austin Ye. Mayu, how is everything going, man?
Good, man. It's a busy week. I'm going to be going to Australia next Wednesday. Every run-up on a trip is fucking busy, right? But this one's kind of interesting because we always travel at night. So I'm never really like off on like business hours and stuff like that. I never really have to worry about like missing like calls or emails that are like time sensitive. And plus like May 1st, which is a busy time of the month, right? It's going to be a 24-hour flight. So I'm really trying to fucking get ahead of some shit here. But I mean, it's probably more anxiety than anything else, to be honest with you. But
can you work on the plane? Like, can you get the, you can get like the Wi-Fi, WhatsApp.
Yeah, it's always shit. It's always fucking garbage.
Oh, is it?
You're trying to like respond to the email. It's taking you like fucking forever to attach a document, right? And it's always like, I was telling my, I went for a suit appointment yesterday. I was talking to the guy about it. And I'm like, yo, like, it's always good in theory to say I'm going to work on a flight. And then you like have all these things open and you're like, yeah, I'm going to get all this shit done. You get on the flight, you're just like, ah, fuck, I'll just watch a movie. I'll just watch the TV show. You just fucking waste the entire flight.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But what have you been up to?
Yeah, what have I been up to? We've been busy with sending out some wholesale deals, as you guys probably see if you're on the list. We had a couple of power sales that we sent out. We ended up selling one of them. Yeah, and like, I just want to bring this point up again, just because I think it's important to be said, is just because property is marketed at a specific price doesn't mean it needs to sell for that price, right? So we had a couple of people who reached out to our Sudbury power sale that we had.
One's right in front of my house, eh?
Sorry?
That one's right in front of my selling plots. What's really the point for like
the just so you can block some having the neighborhood.
yeah but it's very relevant.
Yeah, I mean, we decided to lower the price, renegotiate with the lender, and someone ended up going in. It's like, hey, we need it at 160k, and we made it work. We had to go back and do some negotiation, but it ended up panning out for our Polk Colborne one. We have walkthroughs actually in the next 20 minutes. So that's going to be a full house. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
The interesting thing with these power sales is that the lender doesn't know shit about the property. And as a result, we barely know anything about the property as well. Right.
What's the play for that Sudbury one?
For that Sudbury one, I think people are looking at it simply as a fix and flip with the potential of severing the unit, the land beside and selling it off, because it is on a double lot.
Yeah.
And what else have we been? We sent out a couple of more deals. We sent out one in North Bay, working on walkthroughs for that. But generally speaking, sort of what we've been seeing on the market is that there's interest, but it's slowed down from, I would say, February, March, around that time. There's still definitely people reaching out and some interest, but I think it's leaning more back towards people want absolutely stellar deals. They don't want to compete with anyone. So if you're a buyer right now in the wholesale market, you can, I'm not going to say you can call the shots, but you can definitely shoot your shot and try to get a good price on deals.
Yeah. I was talking to a realtor today morning as well, who kind of said the same thing, right? It's like, you know, take it back a month and we were kind of like ripping. This is my theory. I think any point where we could get rates at 5.1 or lower, I think the market rips. I've noticed it last year when we were getting like 5 years at like 4.7 and stuff like that, like pre summer market slowdown. I noticed it this year when we were getting fives, like 5.1, like 3 year fix, like no problem. The market was ripping. And now we're back at like 5.4, 5.5. And it seems like the market is slowing down quite a bit. Now, I'm not saying that purely because of rates, right? It likely is because the overall sentiment impacts the rates, right? So if overall sentiment is a lot higher for longer, then the rates will naturally be higher for longer. With that, my hand looks ghostly. But so that's my kind of theory. But don't get me wrong, I also think that it's good, man. Like, it was ripping for no reason. And personally, I don't mind this. If you're in acquisition mode, it's not bad, right? You're obviously trying to sell. It's actually, even selling, I had another call with the realtor yesterday. And he's trying to buy something in Oshawa, and the market just seems like it's crazy. Basically, like ARV minus like renovation cost equals purchase price. Like what?
Right. Yeah. So you're better off buying turnkey at that point.
Exactly. Exactly. But then like turnkey, like this specific scenario was like qualifying was a problem for turnkey, so they were trying to buy like a fixer upper and get into the market that way, right? But yeah, it's still challenging, and like it seems like supply side is also a problem, right? So there's not enough people. There's not enough options for people to even buy.
Unless you're in a condo. If you're searching for a condo, dude, that market is taking an absolute beating right now.
I'm curious what your thoughts are.
I mean, I don't think it's a theory. I think it's like just...
it's not a theory.
Owned by real estate investors mostly.
No. It's a speculative theory. So look, they're saying condos right now are... I can't remember the exact number, but the number of like new condos that are actually going into construction are drastically down. I can't remember what...
Yeah.
And right now, the condo market is obviously suffering, as everyone already knows, and it was heavily invested and blah, 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 all the shit, right? So is there a play that you know there's going to be a shortage of condos in about 4 to 5 years in a market where there's already a shortage of real estate to try and grab some of these condos to hold for speculation, essentially?
Yeah, I was going to stop you there and be like, that's definitely a speculatory play because prices... haven't necessarily, I mean, they've softened for sure, but it's not like it's dropped off of a cliff, right? Like people who bought pre-construction and closed on it a year or two ago, they're not letting it go for $100,000, $150,000 lower than what they should theoretically sell it at. I do agree that there's probably some strong condo plays. If you look hard enough, there's probably someone that's just willing to unload something. But like, as you and I know, like we're more focused on land, right? Because that's what really... Yeah. Grows them out. But if you're living in a property right now, it's not, I mean, are you looking for a property to live in? Condos are not a bad option if you can beat someone up on pricing. And the last thing before we jump into the podcast, I just do want to say that I do agree with you. I think if rates head below 5% on the fixed end, particularly like 4.6, 4.7 for a 5-year insured fix, let's say, usually you see the market continuing to do fairly well, right? But we're seeing that sort of go away, like all the rates for the most part are starting with the 5 on the uninsured side. So, I mean, the demand has slowed down and it looks like, I mean, they're still expecting 2 rate cuts by the Bank of Canada this year, but it looks like the markets may be pushing out a June rate cut not to be possible, which is, crazy how we started off the year thinking there was going to be 5 to 6 rate cuts and then just ends up being, would be lucky if there's 2 or 3.
What do you think? You think I should lock in my rate? On my mortgage? This is so dumb. I've been chasing the fucking market now for 2 years, and I keep thinking, okay, we're at the end of this thing. We're gonna start to see cuts, and it's so hard to fucking lock in my variable to a fix. I'm 2.5 years into this bad boy, and so I would have to switch into 3-year fix, and the delta is about a 1.1% basically in saving, right? Hey, so you got it. You take the 1.1 today, or do you wait this out? 1.1 on my mortgage is something like 700 grand or
something. That's material.
It's about 8 grand a year. Yeah. What would you do? Would you lock it in?
Would I lock it in? What's the term?
3 years. 5.3.
Yeah, I would. I think I would.
You would?
Well, yeah. Well, here's the thing. Like, are you going to sell it? Or is this
No, I'm a lifer.
You're a lifer? Yeah, I mean, I would lock it in. That's what we're recommending our clients as well. I'm sure for you.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
So why are we taking our own advice?
I literally recommend it to my clients. And I go, guys, like, to be fair, I'm still on a variable. It's the same time, right? So
yeah,
it's tough to try and lock it in, man. But RBC is giving me some shit renewals on my rental property. But anyways.
RBC?
On a rental property, we have a
4. RBC is competitive as shit in the market right now.
On my renewal right now, they're giving me some bullshit right now.
You can probably negotiate it. Anyways, we don't want to send everyone to RBC now. Pretty good in their rates. Anyways, let's jump into today's podcast episode. We have Ara Paladin. You guys are probably familiar with who Ara is. He was on an episode with us. I think it's probably a year and a half ago. And at that time, he was doing a couple of conversion projects. Since then, like with many other investors, despite the market not performing strong, he's been able to level up his real estate journey. So he's jumping into a 12-plex project that he's been working on, getting 11 vacancies on that bad boy. He's looking into other conversion projects, taking, I believe it was a 4-plex and then adding 2 additional units on it. And he's really leveraging the CMHC MLI Select program. Maybe it's a topic we need to touch on more, Mai, because I think we mention it in our episodes, but never really dive into it. We're seeing a lot of experienced investors pivot towards that. On top of that, Ara still going strong on his fixing and flipping business, his construction business, and recently has also become a multifamily realtor in the KWC area, leveraging his experience in investing and helping other investors along the way with that. You guys are going to get a lot of golden nuggets from this episode. I know Mayu and I definitely learned a lot. Seems like more investors who started off doing these conversions are being pushed towards the multifamily space. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review, share it with a friend, and comment. Do whatever you can to support the podcast. And let's jump right on in. Just a heads up before we get started, this podcast is all about providing you information, not financial or legal advice. So if you need the real deal for your situation, hit up a professional. We can't promise you our information is always up to date or accurate, and we're not responsible for any investment decisions you make based on it. Markets change, information change, you know the drill. Anyways, thank you for hanging out with us responsibly. Let's jump right on in. Hello, everyone. We are joined with our very special guest, and he's here for round two. A lot of updates since Mr. Ara Palladian. Ara, how's everything going, my man?
Everything's going good, guys. Everything's going good. Thanks for having me.
For sure. Ara, so for anyone that doesn't know, we had Ara back in, I think it was episode like 79 or so, right? At that point, I'm just looking at our show notes. At that point, you were essentially, you're still a structural engineer, right? But you had kind of left that. Moved into starting your own construction project. You were focusing on duplex conversions. You were starting to look at multifamilies. Why don't you give us a quick update from there? That was April. I got the date now. April 22nd, 2022 is when we released it. So we probably recorded a couple months before that. The last 2 years, man. Fuck, it's been exactly 2 years. What have you been up
to? Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, man. So a lot of things have changed. My story was basically structural engineer background, and then went into like general contracting for a big builder. And then COVID kind of just derailed everything. I had started a new job and then got laid off from COVID. And then I said, you know what, I've always had that entrepreneurial mindset. So I just went all in like real estate and specifically the construction side. So I started with duplex conversions, but since then, so since our last podcast there, really just kind of dove into multifamily space, saw the writing on the wall with how much these like old school 1960s, 1970s bungalows were going up in price. And just the numbers weren't working anymore. So the multifamily really, really made sense to me. So we were doing that. I wasn't taking on any more clients just because of how much work we had going on for our own projects. So I started flipping a lot more too for some more active income. And then kind of everything just aligned. I had it on the back of my mind for a while to get my realtor license. So I said, you know what? I got nothing to lose. I can sell my own flips. I can help investors, you know, get into multifamily properties or sell them. So that's why I also got my realtor license. So that's kind of a nutshell, kind of the three focuses of the business, you know, since 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's been quite the evolution. I feel like you maybe underplayed some of your multifamily projects that you've got going on. The big projects, they're by no means like small projects at all, in my opinion. But let's talk about the flipping first, because for some reason, Ara, like, it's been a down cycle since you probably got deeper into the game of flipping. But you're continuing to make some pretty good profit margins, right? On a lot of these flips. So I'm just curious, like, we don't need to walk through every single flip, right? But what type of flips have you done? What's like the target? How do you go about like finding these deals? Like, give us that side of the business first.
I just, you know, was conservative with my numbers, was pretty active reaching out to wholesalers, and kind of just, I've been just really breaking down my numbers to them instead of just like throwing in offers. I'm just like, hey guys, like, this is what you're trying to sell it at. This is what I think the ARV is. These are my rental costs, my holding costs and everything. And then I even tell them like my projected profit. And that was kind of my way to just kind of be open and upfront with wholesalers. And yeah, like, I've consistently flipped one since, you know, our last podcast. I've always tried to have at least one on the go. That was another thing that I kind of took away the risk, is not flipping like 3, 4, or 5 at a time. I honestly was just one at a time consistently. Right. And I just took a lot of time, like really making sure my numbers are good. And if I was happy with it, I went with it, and I wasn't really over leveraged by any means. And you know, we control the construction in-house, so that always helped too with timelines and getting things done pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I think an important thing to mention is also having a structural engineer background. You sort of mitigate one of the biggest risks of getting into fix and flips, right? Like, people can overlook cosmetic renovations. People can even overlook some plumbing and electrical, but structural is a big one people get worried about. So when you walk through these properties, you probably already have a good idea on what type of work is going to be involved from that aspect of things. And just from a wholesaler's perspective, to add on to that, if you guys are putting in offers for wholesalers, then they're going to be lower than asked. That's totally fine. But what Ara said, you got to break it down, right? Like, I just had someone throw in a very low offer. Now, just, what's the reasoning behind this? And like, rough math, what does that even mean, right? So I really, like, I've dealt with Ara in the past and sort of the same thing. Like, when you break things down and are transparent with wholesalers, you're more likely to get a good deal and have them collaborate with you. But to continue off of that, Ara, I guess, are you still looking at flips in the current market? And if so, like, what, as Mayu asked before, what type of property are you looking for? Is it like highly distressed ones that no one will touch? Are you looking for things that you can be in and out of quickly?
I'm open to both, but typically it's more of the highly distressed ones. And I just feel like there's a bit less competition and it's kind of more down my alley with being able to do these projects. So we did like an absolutely massive one in Shakespeare, Ontario, which is like basically Stratford, just west of Kitchener. That was the biggest project I've ever done. It had foundation issues, basically down to the studs, but the studs weren't even like legal. We had to build out all the studs, spray foam insulation, all new rough-ins for electrical, HVAC, and plumbing. So it was redoing this house completely, basically, and even fixing like a lot of the structural issues. But again, like, it's my passion. Like, I think most people would have been scared for a project like that. But like, we basically bought it for land value. And that's another reason why, you know, I was just like, really didn't think my risk was high. So we were able to do a project like that. And it's what I'm passionate about. Honestly, it's not just about, obviously the projects need to be profitable, but the quick, like 3 week flips and you don't really put time and effort into it, we would do it like no problem. But it's just not really what excites me. And I really do want to put a statement to all my flips. We try to go like, you know, really high end, really nice finishes. And when someone sees like my work, they know like, you know, that came from me.
So here's like an opposite, like, train of thought, because you're essentially trying to create like a luxury product, right? So then do you get concerned about what is my exit price going to be? Because like a 3-bedroom house is a 3-bedroom house in a lot of markets, right? And then you got to apply a little bit of a premium to that for a luxury. When I was flipping, we always went, hey, worst case, let's build something that can be rental grade, right? Which probably is not the most profitable, right? But I'm just curious kind of your thoughts on that. Like, are you building stuff out for like a luxury end consumer? It sounds like that's not really going to work as a rental grade. Are you concerned about ARV? How are you kind of vetting those numbers?
Yeah, like when I say luxury, like it really, my price point isn't like that much higher than a rental grade. But we'll like try to think outside the box. Like, we'll put in a really nice accent wall that we wouldn't do for a rental property. But again, we have the labor in-house, so it's just really more material. Or for example, I have a flip going on right now in Bracebridge, and we're putting in like a pot filler. Right? I don't know if you guys know what that is. It's like above your range hood. It's like it's literally water supply.
To fill your pots instead of taking the pot.
So it's just like something cool like that. Like, it really, it's a little bit more expensive, like but the plumber does all of it.
Right.
So it's a little bit of added cost, but it's just like that statement. Someone walks in and obviously the kitchen is really, really important. And, you know, they see that it's just a little bit of extra that we would go. We would never put a pot filler for a rental property, but that's something like, that's an example of something we would do.
Yeah, so it's not like you're spending $5,000, $6,000 extra. It's just a couple hundred bucks extra to make a pretty material difference in the property itself, right? So that makes sense. I don't want to dive into flips too deeply, but I'm just curious. So you mentioned a couple of other cities. Like, are you guys just going wherever the deal is profitable? Because some people like to build out like a flipping machine in a specific region once you have your contractors there. We know you have your own in-house company, so that's a little bit different. So are you just going wherever the numbers make sense? And for someone who doesn't have their own in-house, would you suggest to just specialize in a local area?
Yeah, definitely. If you don't have it in-house, I wouldn't just kind of go everywhere. But with me, like, I do have like a, it's like a project coordinator. He's a virtual assistant. So that allows me to really go into any market and have him like vet out like subcontractors, get quotes and stuff like that. So that really helps in the sense where, you know, if we go into somewhere new and we don't have an electrician, well, instead of me going out and reaching out to every single person, I have that, you know, virtual assistant to do that for me. And he has a construction background. So that's kind of why, yeah, we'll flip anywhere where the numbers make sense reasonably. Like I'm not going to go like 8 hours away or anything like that, but you know, Bracebridge was probably like the furthest we'd go, which is about 2 hours for me. But if you don't have that team that, and you're just more yourself and just, you know, relying on hiring one contractor. Yeah. I wouldn't suggest kind of just going everywhere. I would focus more on a specific area or within a range of areas. Like let's say you're KWC, you're within 45 minutes of KWC. So you'd go to like Brantford or Hamilton, but you're not going to go all the way, you know, 8 hours north or something like that. That's what I would do. But so we do that for the buy and holds. Our buy and holds are very, very location specific, but the flips, we broaden our radius.
It sounds like you're using local contractors though. So it's not even that you're using your guy from like KWC to do your flip in Bracebridge. Is that correct?
It all depends. We price it out locally, but like for example, I saved $3,000 sending my drywall team from Kitchener, staying in a motel. And then I just bought the material through like the business. It was $3,000 cheaper than a local drywaller. And that was the cheapest local drywaller we found.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So I obviously, that's another risk, right? In flipping in an area you're not used to. Bracebridge, it's all cottage prices. So they don't care. Like they give you cottage prices and you know, if you don't like it, you know, go find somebody else. I found a lot of, it was really tough to negotiate and all that stuff. And then, yeah, like I have one of my main carpenters. He's been driving out to Bracebridge and, you know, working for a couple of days, staying in motels, doing his thing and then coming back. It's still cheaper than risking like finding local people, especially for like not the skilled trades. Like our electrician's from Bracebridge, but my plumber, he drove all the way from Woodstock and did all the plumbing. It just made way more sense and it was cheaper doing it that way.
Yeah.
So having that base team for me was key.
Do you think your engineering background is helping you with these, like the construction project management piece, or is this kind of just skills that you learned on the trade, like on the work, like while you were going through the flips?
No, it 100% helps. It 100% helps.
Yeah.
Like for example, like it just allows us to do a little bit more complicated stuff that I feel like adds a lot of value. Like my biggest project really ever is we have a 12 unit building in Kitchener and we got 11 out of the 12 vacant and every single unit we're removing walls. So we're opening up every single unit. For some people, that might be like crazy, but a steel beam really doesn't cost that much money. And you know, we do all the work in house, so it's not like we're hiring different trades to do that. The process is really, really simple, but it might scare people, like especially removing like load bearing walls. But for me, I've designed it so many times, and I've done it for my own like duplex conversions myself when I was actually on site working with the tools. You know, that stuff doesn't make me nervous at all. And I feel like it adds like a lot of value.
Right. Completely off tangent, but we were at a property yesterday together and there's basically like this wall that was supported by like temporary beams. I'm like, fuck, like, I don't know what the heck this is. Our literally just walked in, took a look at it for like 2 minutes. He's like, oh yeah, this is like the issue. It's again, these like 2x4s and like just replace it. So like even just that ability to like quickly identify an issue and the solution, like versus me trying to bring in like some sort of an engineer to like take a look and then they're going to put together a report and like blah, 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 and all those kind of costs you're essentially eliminating, right? So that makes sense.
Another example would be for the only reason we got this 12-plex. So the seller never wanted to do a VTB, which would have helped a lot because the rents were really, really low. And we knew we were going to try to like get everybody to vacate if possible. And my inspector saw some cracks throughout the one side of the building. It was like kind of interior, but not right in the middle. I'd say like a third, like cut the building in half and then cut it in half again. At that point, it was sinking.
Mm-hmm.
And we only knew that it wasn't obvious from the outside. We only knew that because there was like cracks in the door frames at that exact point, all the way up every single floor we went to.
Yeah.
So a lot of people would have just been like, okay, I'm out. This is really, really like, this is too much for me. So we figured out through all our like just visual analysis, there was nothing wrong structurally. So we're like, oh, okay, then this must be a soil issue. And I used that to get, you know, amazing VTB terms. Because originally we were going to get like 75% loan of value, but it would have been like 9% because we would have had to like bridge financing basically.
Right.
We were able to get 4% interest only VTB for 5 years.
Wow.
Because of this issue. So it was like $80,000 or $90,000 in interest savings alone in the first year. And we actually utilized that issue to basically tell people, like, listen, like, you guys know, like, there's huge issues in this building. You know, this is what we're offering. And everybody but one person, you know, accepted the offer, like, no problem, no questions asked. It was a very dilapidated building. There was cockroaches in the building. Like, clearly, like, the building is sinking. Like, if you go in the basement, there was, like, tiles coming off the concrete and all this stuff. And it ended up being a theoretically simple solution, an expensive solution, but a simple solution. And most investors I know would probably want to walk away from that. But for us, it was just like, oh, we'll take this on, no problem.
Right.
We figured out the soil condition was so bad. It was actually like, it's called like peat gravel. It's like you can grow like vegetables through it. So it had absolutely no compressive strength. So it just, at that point, it just kept sinking. So it was probably just lazy contractors back in the 60s that just kind of backfilled that area with whatever they had. And that was the issue. So we basically put these things called helical piles, and we supported all the exterior of that side of the building and the interior load bearing walls with these helical piles. So what a helical pile is basically it goes so deep into the ground until a point where it catches good soil, and it, like, you read it with like torque to know like you've got your compressive strength. So in some of the really bad areas, we had to go 22 feet down to get good soil.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
You can tell how passionate you are, how knowledgeable you are about this. And I'm just like, fuck, I would not deal with this. Like, I just, I know about this. But
so how do you even estimate the cost of something like that? Because even though you're a structural engineer, I mean, I imagine you don't run across issues like this very frequently, right? Is it more so structural issues with the property versus like the soil having a concern? Like, how did you get confidence around that? And what type of due diligence did you need through that process?
Yeah, it was honestly just through experience. Like, I didn't know exactly how much helical piles cost, but I had a general idea of, okay, how much is it going to cost for us to remove all this concrete? How much is it going to cost to pour the new concrete? It was just a matter of talking to my actual structural engineer that stamps all the drawings for me, which is the company I actually used to work for. It was just a matter of talking to him, being like, hey, do you guys have any good helical pile contractors? Do you have a rough idea how much it costs? And then I kind of just make a budget through that. And, you know, obviously I'm never bang on, but I'm always, you know, relatively close. So that's been good.
Did you have an idea if the tenants were going to leave anyways before buying the property? Because you said it was fully tenanted, right? I know the property's distressed, but sometimes, you know, some tenants, that's all they could end up affording. So they just end up planting their feet there and not wanting to move out.
Yeah. There was a couple of hints that I felt like we were going to be okay. Yeah, but, you know, it was basically just going off the, it was a risk. It was definitely was a risk, but it was going off the status of the building, talking to the, some of the tenants, meeting them in person. Most of them were like from the same, like country, like they were like not necessarily related, but like friends, and the landlord had like filled in vacancies from like word of mouth from those people. And they're all like immigrants to Canada. And I just had a feeling like if I can convince like one of them, two of them, like to go just like figure out like, guys, look at this building. But once they understood kind of the whole set of them would be good. Like they would be okay with it. Or it was going to be all like, none of them are going to leave. They're going to just kind of stick together and none of them are going to leave. But they understood, honestly, the immigrants were the best people to deal with because like they just completely understood. And the guy that's still there was like, just trying to bring my name down and all this stuff. But like he doesn't even realize. So a lot of those tenants that were like family and stuff, they put the money together and I guess they had savings that I gave and I gave them like free rent and stuff. And they bought a house together.
Damn.
So like it's not just like you're a terrible landlord kicking immigrants out. He's trying to tell me I abused immigrants. Like, look at me. Like I come from immigrant like parents.
Yeah.
But these people did great. It was probably the best financial decision they ever made. And they would have ended up buying in like one of the lowest times ever. Right. That's so they probably got a great house for a great price. And a lot of it was money that we gave them and they collectively put that money together. So it's just a matter of talking to them and genuinely wanting the best for them. Like they had this little kid there, like 2 years old, that they were just taking care of, walking barefoot and just like 2 feet beside him was like a cockroach on the floor. Like they were not living in good environment. So, and we've completely got rid of the cockroach issue. We fixed the structural issue. The city's on board with us 100%. they're excited that we're, you know, doing all this work. I have a great relationship with the inspectors. Like, it's just this one last guy that's giving a hard time, but we're getting through it.
So I was going to formally transition to multifamily, but I think we've talked quite a bit about the 12-plex. I'm curious though. So like the hunt leading up to 12-plex, you and I have talked about a couple of different deals that you looked at. What was that process like? What led you to go down the multifamily route? Because you're arguably making good money in the flips as well, right? So like, why then do multifamily, right? But just talk about that transition a little bit. I think a lot of guests would kind of relate to that.
So when we first did our last podcast, I got my first 6-plex. And I just saw that the numbers work so much better and all that. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to fully put my time into off-market deals, building relationships, and trying to connect with these like old-time landlords that are looking to offload, especially in like the Kitchener-Cambridge area. And that's kind of what happened. My landscaper, he did a lot of work for this old school Kitchener guy who had like 150 units and he's just slowly kind of getting rid of units. So that's who I got the 12-plex from. It was through my landscaper's connection. We met, we hit it off, and just kind of figured out what he needs. He was just trying to like get out and still make money. So that's why the VTB ended up actually being a great option. I just found like as many people as you talk to, the better. Like, for example, I saw a 4-rent sign going to my 6-plex, and I called that guy up and kind of gave him, I broke down the kind of the whole VTB. He'd never even heard of it before. We figured out he's probably going to make more money with a VTB than he's making right now holding the building.
Dang.
So it's just building as many relationships with these people as possible. And if you're like really, really greedy with it, like they're going to catch it right away. It's really trying to figure out a win-win for both parties. And I feel like that's kind of the best way to make deals. And also reaching out to realtors. So I'm really close with honestly, he's like an expert KWC multifamily. Like he knows everything about every building. And so I met him through my first 6-plex. He was the realtor for that building. And I've been just kept in touch with him. He'll send me, you know, exclusive deals because he knows we'll close. And, you know, we're into like the more different type of projects. Like we just also bought a 4-plex in Kitchener, but it's a 4-to-6-unit conversion. So it's like two stories. Two units. And then the basement had 4 garages and they were kind of like walkout garages. And my realtor said like this, I for sure think you can get some units down here. So we're looking at a possibility of getting 2 units, 2 2-beds down there, or maybe even like 3 1s or potentially 4 bachelors. It all depends on what the city wants us to do. But another reason why we're getting into these projects is with the MLI Select program. It just makes so much more sense. It's like right down my alley. It's like another thing with the 12 unit, we're fully approved for MLI Select energy efficiency and we're like cutting no corners. Like we're putting in these like crazy heat pump systems. We're getting rid of the gas completely. There's going to be absolutely no gas to this building. We're like separating water meters. The hydro meters are already separate. Everyone's going to have their own water heater, water meter, and hydro meter. So it's like, it's really like these condo style rental purpose built apartments now. And it's going to be a really, really high quality building. And it's, you know, the financing terms are great with MLI Select. So that's kind of why we're really going hard on these types of projects. And with the MLI Select, if you're doing this work anyways, like they want you to do like the energy efficiency stuff, you might as well, you know, do it right from the beginning. That's always kind of been my motto with all projects I've done, especially buy and holds. So the numbers still seem really enticing, mainly due to MLI Select.
You're building these out in a way that I guess in the future they could be condomized if you wanted to. Is that kind of a potential exit that you're considering or no?
It could be. We haven't really took too much thought into that. But for example, like our heat pumps, like the actual system itself, we're building these little closets, kind of like what you'd see in like a condo building that, you know, if anybody ever had to do maintenance to one specific heat pump, it's right there. Like all of the components are right there. So like nothing's like we're thinking ahead for like maintenance and really how to maintain this building 10, 15, 20 years from now. So
right.
We're considering all that, you know, while we're doing the rentals.
Mm-hmm. And just curious, is there a certain type of building that you're looking for? So you mentioned that you're doing a 4-unit to 6-unit conversion. I know some people do mixed use and convert that into residential. And it sounds like you bought a 12-plex with that had structural issues. Like, what type of property generally in the multifamily world are you looking for? Like something that you can add additional units into for the most part, or like just like under rented and slow turnaround?
We're looking more for like problems that we can fix, or like, you know, I'm not opposed to like the long-term game too, just like natural turnover, cash or keys. But, you know, as you guys know, even more experienced than me, like the cash or keys conversations can get really rough. And then there are people where you, you know, you just really feel for it and you just, you know, don't have it in you to like even want them to leave or anything like that just because of their situation. So, you know, it is more like the fourplex to a sixplex conversion, for example, was a fully vacant building. So it's like stuff like that where, you know, we want to get in and we really want to solve problems. That's like my biggest thing. Like as a kid growing up, I wanted to build houses. Like that was like kind of my dream. So I've always had that, like, I want to build, I want to renovate, I want to solve problems and make things better. That's what we're looking for. We do like your typical like three-story brick purpose-built apartment buildings, like 12 units and above. We are looking to keep buying like bigger buildings. But yeah, the more opportunity there is for us to really use our skills in construction, the better.
Yeah, it sounds like the multis you are doing is something you can add immediate value into the first year. Like a lot of people that get into multifamily, like, oh, it's a five-year game, which makes sense, right? Long-term. Are you looking at sort of replicating, you know, on the residential space, it's very possible to be in and out of projects within 6 months. Are you looking at doing something similar in the multi game, right? Because your first project, it sounds like it hasn't been too long to get to where you are today. And with the fourplex that you're going to add 2 units, that's doable in much less than a year, right? Is that the sort of multis that you're looking for preferably?
Preferably, yeah, for sure. And a lot of these scenarios, you know, do have the vacancies, do have like the glaring issues. You know, if it comes to a point where, you know, we have sitting on cash or something like that, and I want to put it in a deal, I don't mind the long-term game at all. I actually like recommend that to clients all the time. The long-term game is fantastic. But for us, because we can be a bit picky with the projects we go into, we are looking for the immediate value projects for sure.
So let's talk about those value add projects, because I think like, A, when you're targeting like vacant units, there usually is already going to be a premium, right? Like on a property that comes vacant versus a property that comes with like $600 a month, like tenants, you're usually going to be a little bit more of a premium. And then when you're looking at something and going, okay, this could be a 6 unit versus a 4 unit. I had this conversation with someone recently. How do you go about valuing or determining what your max like allowable offer should be? Are you going, this is what it's going to be worth as a sixplex minus my renovation cost, minus some sort of a margin equals what I can buy? Or are you going at it from a, this is a fourplex, it's a vacant fourplex, so maybe you pay more than a tenanted fourplex, but it's still only a fourplex and that's my max allowable offer?
Yeah, so that's actually a really good question. So this one, like we typically wouldn't just get like a fully tenanted fourplex. It's just not really worth, it's not worth my time for a smaller building like that. We are looking for like 12 and above. But this opportunity, the realtor reached out to me. He's like, hey, I think you'd be interested in this deal. The tenant lived there. The owner lived there because he had sold his house at like in the peak, moved into this. He lived upstairs and his daughters lived beside him. His wife lived upstairs and the daughters lived beside him. Fully renovated those 2 units. Like they, and like my level of renovations, like they look great. And then the middle had one vacancy. And the other one was going to be leaving shortly. And it was his friend. And they're all like European. They're like moving to Europe. So right off the bat, he's like, yeah, you have this, you know, it's going to be fully vacant. So, you know, he got good money for a fourplex. Like we paid 1.25 for it, which is just over 300 a unit, which we typically buy like 200 a unit for the bigger stuff.
Is it in Kitchener or Waterloo or where was it?
Kitchener. Yeah, this is in Kitchener. So he got the price that he wanted. But we got the terms we wanted in the sense that he let us renovate the 2 middle units. Like we're renovating them right now. We don't close until July 15th, but we're renovating them right now. So we actually we're going to have 4 fully turned over up rent units by the time we close. So our financing terms are actually pretty good. Like we're closing with commercial for now, but we have like 70% loan to value. We're very comfortable with our closing terms. And it's going to be cash flow positive. So now we can take that fully tenanted building, great rents, cash flow. We can do the 2-unit conversion in the basement level. And then we can take that to MLI Select and refinance and have great terms and pull out all of our money. And now it's an even better cash flowing building and just hold it forever. So stuff like that is really, really kind of what we're looking at. So because I ran all my numbers, I knew as a sixplex, it'd be worth about 2.2 and two already renovated units. And then the two middle units, all my renos and everything like that, especially with the conversion of the basement, we're probably going to be around like the 3,350 mark. So all in about 1.6. So, you know, even call it 1.65. And if we have a 2.2 ARV, like I think it was about 80% or 75% loan to value would get all of our money out. Okay. So with, especially with MLS like that, I think we shouldn't have any issues with that. So a deal like that, it justified that all day.
Right. Yeah. So it sounds like to answer Mayu's question, it's you look at what the potential is that you can convert it into and then work backwards from there.
Yep. Yep. And this one, I was so confident because, again, because it's vacant, it was pretty hard to not be pretty accurate with the numbers there.
Yeah, but it also sounds like it's not like the sellers know that, hey, you can convert this to a sixplex, and because the seller really dictated the price on this one, but you got it on the terms, right? Which similar to the other one as well, like if you get it with the VTB, like there's an indirect savings that like a lot of people just don't consider, right? Like the VTB that we have out right now, like 4%, which is like market rents are like 9. You know, I was talking to my partner of that one, it's basically like 50,000 or more a year in savings. And if you run that for 2 years, that's 100K off the price, but the sellers aren't as fixated on their interest rates on that stuff, right? So it sounds like that one, he was more sticky on the price, but you got on the terms. And then ultimately the hidden potential is what you're also getting rewarded on with that lift. Because the four units, if you just refinance it as a four unit, well, kind of like a turnkey four unit, right? Probably wouldn't be too much higher than your purchase price, but by adding in the two units in the bottom, that's 600K left for about 300 grand of work, right? So
Exactly. That's exactly the way we look at it. And he actually knew there was potential of converting. He's reached out to the city and stuff before, but he was moving to Europe. You know, he's very comfortable with what he was getting, the 1.25. It's a great value for just a fourplex, even though he knew there was more potential in it. And we have great working terms with him, especially with him letting us renovate early. And he's just been so accommodating. And again, like it's kind of a win-win scenario for everyone. He got the price he wanted. We were able to renovate. We're going to have a fully finished, you know, building on close, and, you know, everyone's happy.
Was there much competition on this deal, or this was pretty much an exclusive listing?
It was completely exclusive. Yeah. Marilda brought it to me. We met with the landlord, with the realtor, and just talked terms, and kind of everyone was open about everything, and we came to an agreement.
That's the best way to go about it, obviously, because if something like this was listed on the market fully vacant, who knows what it might go for, right? Because now you're competing with people who might really overpay for what it's really worth.
For sure. And you know, he wanted somebody reliable to close for sure, because he's moving to a different continent. So he wanted, like, you know, a good buyer close on his term, like by his dates, you know, because his kids were in like high school, they have exams. So we kind of did everything around both of our schedules, but more specifically his schedule. And, you know, for us, we were okay with it, because with all the talks about, you know, interest rates potentially going down over time, if he wanted to delay closing, we were happy. We were fine with it.
I do want to touch into the, did you have any questions?
No, I was going to say the same thing, like touching on the realtor side, right? Because I think I've got an idea of how, that is to say, we're always kind of like pocket watching. Like, how is this business like formed, right? Like, you've got your active income streams, which is the flipping, right? Then you've got the passive income stream, which is the multifamily. But there's a limit on like how much multifamily we can do, because you're carrying debt and you're carrying, like, it doesn't pay until like way down the road, right? And obviously now the transition into the realtor side, just want to understand, A, what type of like clientele are you like marketing to, right? Like, what are you doing on the realtor side? Who are you like really servicing? Is it more so on the multifamily side? Is it more so on the flip side? Or like, you used to do conversions in KWC, right? Just want to understand that side of the business, what that's looked like, how you've gotten started, and so on.
Yeah. So that side of the business is definitely the newest. It needs like the most amount of attention for marketing moving forward. But the way I looked at it was, like you said, so we have like the three components. The buy and hold side is its own entity. And then we use the construction to do all those renovations and to do all that work. And then now, you know, there was obviously that lacking active income. So that's where flipping came into place. And so then I added one more kind of section where it's like, I found a lot of times where I felt like, you know, I can do what the realtor's doing, if not better, with regards to the negotiations and all that stuff. So I had that in the back of my mind to get my realtor license. So I said, you know what, if I'm going to flip and I'm going to scale, I can get even more of that active income if I sold my own flips. So that's kind of the beginning thoughts of the realtor side. And then I said, you know what kind of clientele do I want to get? Because not everything can be just be like my own stuff. And that's kind of where I just kind of had that light bulb moment where, like, with all this experience that I have with construction, with multifamily, with running my numbers, with all that stuff, I said, I want to get into helping investors buy or sell multifamily. So mm-hmm. that's kind of where I'm transitioning the realtor side to. I don't work with like, just like people selling their own house, unless it's like a family member or something like that, that wants to use me, like, no problem. But I really want to just focus on getting clients to buy multifamily or sell. But specifically, like, if we're talking about the buy side, because I can really help them kind of like you said, Mario, like, I can point out structural issues. I can point out issues that you might foresee in the future. I have great contacts in the KWC area for like environmental people, engineers, you know, inspectors, all that stuff. So I said, you know what, I might as well tackle that side of the business and really help others get into multifamilies as well. And yeah, that's kind of where I'm heading for the realtor side.
Awesome. So how does it look like to build out a commercial real estate business as a realtor? Because you would have to generate a lot more leads on the multi side, especially if you're going to be focused on KWC. One of the common conversations we have is with buildings, you really go wherever it's available, right? Because there's not always this huge active list inventory of listings for buildings in one specific region. So how do you go about building that side out?
So far, it's been more from like the connections I've had over the past, you know, 4 years of being, you know, full time into the construction real estate side of things. But that is a part where I do have to work more with like the marketing myself on. But like, yeah, right now it's just been like my own kind of circle and, you know, finding deals and then reaching out to these people. And that's basically it. Right now it's a lot of in-house clientele, but not even clientele, just, you know, colleagues in the real estate investing side of things where I'll find deals and be like, hey, these numbers look great, or I find a lot of value in this, send them over and work that way.
So what are you finding that works right now? Because covering like KWC, the three markets there, is it existing multifamily? Is it conversions? Is it like development? Like, what are you really seeing that works in today's market?
Yeah, honestly, I see a lot like 6 or even 8 units and above of really working for the long term, especially if you can get the vacancies and stuff like that. But like, again, if you're just expecting like a quick 1 year turnaround, you know, I don't think that that's the way you should look at the market these days. But I just think there's so much value in these purpose-built rental buildings, especially with like the type of like tenants we get in KWC. Yeah. Like, it's a very high quality tenant pool. There is some rough areas, but again, it's not like Hamilton by any means. But I always said this, even when I was getting into duplex conversions, it was like a bit cheaper than Hamilton, but the rents are the same, if not a bit higher, and the tenant pool is better. So I really love the area. I think it has so much potential. It has every single, like, basically industry, right? Like, it's got 2 of the biggest universities in Canada, in Waterloo. It's got multiple hospitals. You know, there's like, you know, big, there's like tech industries coming there, like Google's in Kitchener. It has so many different sectors of like the economy that it's just so strong there. Rents are good. The people are good. And that's kind of why I pushed that area, even though like I born and raised in Cambridge, but I've moved to like Toronto now. But everything I do is there because it makes so much sense. So I would recommend people get into multis for the long-term game. Development plays are obviously fantastic. I think that is something that people can look at. Again, it does take a little bit more experience and it is a bit more nerve-wracking, but even just getting into these purpose-built buildings, I think is a strong play for the long-term.
I think Kitchener has always been one of those cities that it's been too far to be like a commuter town per se, right? Like Hamilton, I think, at least for like the last 10 years, has always been a commuter town. Kitchener, there's definitely people that are commuter towns into Toronto, but I would say it's more of a standalone market than is any kind of commuter town, right? So it's always had that benefit kind of working for it. And yeah, I'd agree, like the tenant profile, everything like that seems to check out. Curious, are you seeing any like plays in Waterloo, or is the focus right now in Kitchener, or is it in Cambridge? Between the three markets, what do you think has the most potential? Where do you think people should look?
I like Cambridge and Kitchener personally. Waterloo, it's kind of a different ballgame because of the universities. There were some like really, really big players in Waterloo doing like big, big stuff, like development stuff, student rental stuff. But there is like outskirts of Waterloo. Like we're looking at a Aplex in Waterloo from the same landlord that we bought the 12plex from. So we definitely would go to Waterloo. Waterloo is fantastic. But again, it is like the kind of upper echelon of the KWC.
Right.
I'd say Waterloo 1, Kitchener 2, Cambridge 3. Even though Cambridge is like the closest of the 4-1, closest commute to Toronto. But like you said, it's not really a commuter town for people to move from Toronto to come to Cambridge. But all three, like the Tri-Cities, like KWC itself is, you know, you can get to everywhere pretty close. But I would definitely rank them Waterloo, Kitchener, Cambridge. So if you want the least amount of competition, I'd say you start looking in Cambridge. It also has a bit of a more difficult, city with regards to, they're just not as progressive as Kitchener. Even like the duplex conversion days, they just wanted you to put units in Kitchener. Whereas Cambridge, you kind of had to fight a little bit, which also meant, you know, more opportunity because of what there was less competition.
Right.
But yeah, that's basically what I would say for the Tri-Cities.
Yeah, perfect, man. No, I think this is a solid episode. We literally just covered flipping, multifamily, and went into a little bit of a deep dive on KWC. So that was a packed episode. But all right, so at this point in the podcast, we asked two questions. So the first question is, I'm going to tell this a little bit more specific to you, but for someone that's looking to get into, call it the larger multifamily space, like over 8 units or so, right? What's the main piece of advice that you'd give them? What's the main risk that you want to make sure they're aware of? Any kind of like whatever you want to share related to that?
Yeah, I would say your main risk is to not over leverage yourself with like super high negative cash flow debt. I think just be realistic with your timelines. Like if you don't have enough capital, partner with some people, you know, get 2-3 people together. And if you have to go a bit of a higher loan to value at the beginning, you know, it is a little long-term play. So just with that scenario, just understand what you're getting into and just try to like keep your risk lower just in case you don't get turnover right away. But eventually you will, right? You will get natural turnover and just be smart in that sense. And, you know, I don't want to give myself a plug here, but get a realtor that is experienced and knows what he's doing to really help you out. Like you said, like commercial is a completely different ballgame. You really need to know what you're doing and what you're getting into. So have that help. Make sure you have enough capital. And yeah, keep your risk super low.
For sure. And then the second question is, where do you see your business evolving in the next like 2 to 3 years?
So I would say, yeah, 2 to 3 years is continuing on this trajectory. Scaling the flips for sure. Eventually, I would like to hire like a project manager in-house just to kind of really help run the projects. Like just even right now, like we have all 11 units going on under renovations at the 12plex. We have the 4 to 6plex, like the 2 units there fully on the go and the Bracefish flip.
Man.
And it's basically me, my project coordinator, and then all the site people. It is a bit too much for me to handle like this. So
yeah,
it's just keep building that team so I can keep focusing on the other parts of the business, like the finding off market leads, helping clients with the multifamily. So scaling the flipping in that sense, building the team and scaling the flipping, because I do believe in the flipping in Ontario. Just continue growing the realtor side and specific big time mainly is just keep buying multifamily. I have like a very, you know, big goal for the next, you know, even 5 years for that. And
what's the goal? You think I'm gonna leave you like that? What's the goal?
I'll tell you guys this off camera.
Awesome. I really appreciate you jumping on, Matt. We always like to have guests come back because in a period of 2 years, people can't believe how much you can actually accomplish in this space, especially if you grind and put your mind to it. And you're a prime example of that. One of the interesting points you mentioned there that I just want to touch on again is when Mayu asked, what would you recommend people do to get into the bigger stuff? It's like almost the same thing when someone asks us, how could we get started in investing, right? Like if you don't have enough capital, you pool in with people to minimize your risk. And it sort of seems like it's the same thing on the bigger scale. Don't over leverage yourself, pool in with multiple people if you need to just get into that first project, learn the ropes, and then as you become more experienced, then you can sort of branch off and do things on your own, right? If people want to follow your journey, connect with you, maybe use your multifamily services, how could they best reach out to you?
Yeah, so honestly, you can, you know, call me, email me. I'll give you guys everything for the show notes. Honestly, even if you guys just have questions and want to just have that initial communication, send me a DM on Instagram. I don't do all like the posting myself, but I check all the DMs would be me. So yeah, reach out through Instagram, probably be the best thing.
Awesome. Awesome. So again, it'll be down in the show notes below. So feel free to reach out to Ara for any of your needs. And make sure to leave us a 5-star review, comment, do whatever you can to support the podcast because it helps bring great guests like Ara on. And until next time, everyone, invest smarter and live better. Take care, all.